Welcome to episode 45 of Behaviorally Speaking, a podcast featuring board-certified behavior analysts Angela Nelson and Kristen Bondi. On this episode, they talk all about the when, why, and how of talking with your child about their disability. And now, here are your hosts, Angela Nelson and Kristen Bondi.
Hello, and welcome to episode 45 of Behaviorally Speaking. I'm one of your hosts, Dr. Angela Nelson, a board-certified behavior analyst and mother of two.
And I'm Kristen Bondi, also a board-certified behavior analyst and mother of three. Hey, Angie. I like the way you changed up the beginning. I heard the episode 45.
Yeah, I know.
just came out that way, huh?
I know. I guess I'm getting tired of seeing it the exact same way every time.
Right?
Gotta spice it up a little bit.
I think I've said before, like, do we just always keep count? Like, I feel like we have to now, right? Like, what if we're like on... Welcome to episode 362.
I know. Yeah, we have to.
Do people do that? Right?
I think so. Oh, all right. They don't. That's what we should do.
That's what we're going to do. Okay. Yeah.
Plus, I think saying 45th episode just
sounds that's
like
a hard one. Tongue twister. I couldn't even say tongue twister. Now I have to say it at the end, so I'm probably going to mess it up.
Yeah. Well, so we are diving into a really interesting and I think important topic today. We're going to talk about how we approach talking to our kids about their disabilities. I know there's a lot of literature and resources out there about talking to kids about disabilities in general, but we wanted to do a special episode dedicated to families who have children with disabilities, because these questions come up quite often. You know, how do I approach it? When do I approach it? What do I say? So we wanted to dive into this today.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. This is just such an important one, and I think it's going to be really good. So before we dive into we kind of created a plan for how we can approach this. But before we do that, we wanted to mention that it could be really helpful for you to think, have I processed this diagnosis and how have I processed, right? So remembering that the way that you feel about it or the way that you present the way you feel about it to your kids is going to be really impactful. So it might be helpful to just take a moment and really think about, how do I feel about this diagnosis, right? Mm-hmm. And then from there, it'll be even easier to come up with that plan. But I just wanted to mention that because it's really important to start with that.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up. I think it's a good reminder in general for parents to be self-reflective of their own reactions to things, because our kids are watching us and it kind of influences and, you know, directly or indirectly influences their behavior or the way that they might feel about certain things. So, yeah, I think taking some private time to process. You know, I will say, I think it's important to mention, too, everybody goes through that process a little differently. There isn't one kind of, quote unquote, right way to go through that early diagnosis stage. Mm-hmm, some people are like, okay, whew, well, now at least it explains a lot and they feel relieved. Other people, you know, there's just a myriad of feelings. So I think it's important to kind of get in touch with that and recognize that how you're feeling, it's going to probably seep out into your behaviors. And your kids are going to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, so let's kind of dive in. After you've gotten a chance to kind of process the diagnosis, see how you feel about it, it's important to plan out how you're going to approach this conversation with your kids. As we mentioned in the intro, the when and the why and the how, these are important things to think about ahead of time. So there isn't, again, there's not one direct way to approach this. It's not kind of a linear thing. We're going to talk a lot about that in a minute. But some sources say that a good place to start or a good indicator that it's time to have these conversations is when your child starts asking questions about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to know, they're curious. Maybe somebody else said something, or maybe they're starting to have some self-awareness and realize that maybe they're doing things differently than other kids, or they can't do the same things that their peers are doing. So You want to think about the timing. Also, other kids might start to ask questions of them. They might start noticing. Obviously, if your child has a physical disability, that might be more apparent earlier on in life. So those conversations might actually happen earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As opposed to maybe a developmental disability that, you know, doesn't manifest as much physically. So that is something to also consider. Kids might bring it up before you were ready. Also, how to bring it up. One thing that we found to be pretty consistent in the literature is it's not a one and done. It's not a one-time conversation. Having a conversation when your child is seven is going to look very different and maybe more basic and matter of fact than when your child's 17. So it's definitely an ongoing conversation. I think it's just, you know, the takeaway for this one is you should probably think about a plan for yourself because this may come up before you're ready. Right. What if you know, we were talking about this the other day. This came up, I think, with one of our clients. The kid just sprang it on the parent. Hey, mom, am I autistic? And if you get that question before you're ready, again, kind of going back to your earlier point, Kristen, too, if you're like, that's going to send a message to your child like, oh, did I ask something wrong?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, you know, like, why did that startle you? So you should be prepared.
or if you just like kind of push away and try to redirect, right? Like, right. I think that's equally problematic, right? If you're just like, oh, no, we'll talk about it later, you know, like then it's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like that, you know, that could also cause some difficulties there.
Yeah. Thinking that this is akin to the puberty discussion
next month. Yeah.
Talking about, it's the same sort of thing. Like, you should be prepared because you never know when those questions are going to pop up. So, yeah, have a plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, along those lines, I think it could be helpful that I get this question a lot with parents. And the first thing that I usually recommend is if your child comes to you, let's say they do come to you in the car on the way to soccer practice and they say, am I autistic? Your first question could be, well, what do you know about autism, right? Yep. Because I think that's a really good way to get into their minds a bit. I have a client I've been working with, very similar situation, and she did all the things, right? Everything we're talking about today, and she had a conversation with her child, and her child said, no, I don't see it. I'm not autistic. And was like, I don't know. I really don't see it. And then she was like, well, let's talk about that. What do you know about autism? And he kind of described a lot of behaviors that he was not engaging in, right? And so he was like, I'm not autistic. But it was the mom was kind of like, now what do I do? She came to me, you know, with that story, right? But I think it can be so helpful to kind of set yourself up for success and kind of push it back on them. Well, what do you know? Could be so good. And then from there, I as we were looking up this topic, there can be various statements that you could make and you could have ready to go if your child is asking questions or if they're making statements about themselves, right? So sometimes kids might say, I'm stupid, right? And then we're like, oh, wait, hold on. Like, where's that coming from? And as you mentioned, right, like that's when, oh, maybe we need to start opening the door to these conversations. But also we could have a way to respond to that might be better, right? And so some examples could be when you're talking to your child about it, you might be able to say something like, you think differently, right? That's not good. That's not bad. You think differently. Or another one could be, your challenges don't define you. Everyone has strengths. Everyone has challenges. That's okay. Another one could be, a disability is a difference that makes it harder for others to do something that others may be able to do easily. So again, it's a difference, but it doesn't mean it's good or bad, right? So it's just about opening the door for that conversation. I think my favorite, though, of all of these, and I think could be super applicable in all cases, is to say to your child, I know you're trying hard, right? Because we know, and you and I have worked so much with families who have children who are diagnosed with ADHD, tend to get corrected a lot, right? And and they could be trying really, really hard and they're still corrected. And so I think it's really helpful to call that out. Like, I know you're trying really hard. Here's how your brain might work a little differently. Let's do something about that, right? Let's come up with a plan, come up with strategies.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. And you already mentioned this, but I think it's very important to think about ways to keep it age appropriate, right? So we want to kind of talk to their level. Like you said, like you might say something to a 7-year-old differently than you're going to say it to a 17-year-old, for example. And then the last one on that is, and I mentioned it a little bit before, but I think with these conversations, these are hard conversations to have with kids. And as parents, we want to kind of shy away, right? So we're like, here's the information, bye, right? And that's that. Yes. Instead, I would encourage you to ask, to encourage them to ask questions, right? So now we know a little bit more about autism. What questions do you have for me, right? So I think that instead of shying away from that, really encourage that question asking can be really helpful.
Yeah, I love that. Establish yourself as a trusted partner in this. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I'm going to give you the facts. I'm going to navigate this with you. Uh-huh. You know, and I'm here if you, you know, have questions or concerns. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. So moving on to the next tip here. It is important. This kind of goes along with having a plan. It's important to identify what to say to others. And it's also important to think about empowering your child, because this is not your disability. It could be, you know, you could share that disability. Some are, you know, run in families, but this is their disability. This is their choice. You can guide them. You can coach them. You can give them some ideas, but ultimately it's their choice to decide who they want to share it with and what they want to say. It might be helpful to help them kind of create a one-liner or a short elevator pitch, or even something that can help, you know, shut down any bullying, let's say, if you're finding that bullying is coming up. But sometimes kind of just a quick matter of fact, yeah, I have autism, or yeah, I have ADHD. That just, you know, impacts away, I think, or so I think differently than you. Kind of saying it matter of fact sometimes helps to, you know, bubble down any sort of, you know, things that might come afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's helpful to practice and role play this with your child. You can role play it in different ways, in different scenarios, whether it's just a curious peer, because kids are curious. And especially if your child is behaving and communicating and socializing differently than, let's say, the general, you know, standardized norms of the classroom, you're going to get questions about it from mm-hmm. kids. Not necessarily bullying, but that could come too. So to practice, get ahead of this, be proactive, you know, help your child brainstorm something that they're feeling comfortable saying is going to be a really, I think, empowering process for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, two things on this that I was thinking as you were going along. When we say, like, identify what to say to others, you were referring to what the child could say to others,
yes,
right, when it comes to them. But another question I get asked a lot, and we did talk about this, is sometimes parents will say, what do I say to my neighbor or to my in-law, my mother-in-law, right, who's judging me for my child's behavior, and I don't know what to say. And I actually get that one a lot. And then I think, you know, related to that is we have to be careful about what we say in front of our children. And even, yeah, and I have this conversation a lot, especially kids with autism who are impacted by their disability quite a bit. It doesn't mean that they're not hearing you, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we might say something, or a parent might say, you know, oh, you know, he's not talking yet or something. And that one's not bad, but given, like, whatever they might say, right, could be something that is perceived and your child hears that and then that becomes part of their identity. So I know it's a loaded way of saying that, but I think it's being careful what we say as parents to other people about our kids could be important too.
100%.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say on that is when kids get older, and you had mentioned it, right? Like, when they get older, they could decide who they want to tell. I have a client that I'm working with, and he recently got diagnosed with ADHD. Mom was talking to him about it. They had a really good conversation, and he said, do I have to tell my teacher? And she said, no, I mean, not unless you feel like you want to give this information to your teacher, you think it'd be beneficial. Let's talk about some of the pros and cons of telling your teacher, right? But again, ultimately, like, he was afraid that if his teacher knew she was going to do things differently in class, that was then going to result in his peers knowing. And we get that a lot with older kids. So these are things that we need to consider.
Yeah, it's a good point, too. It's good to think long term. I mean, you and I do workplace consultations. And I mean, you probably see this every day like I do. People will say, no, I haven't disclosed to my employer that I have a disability. Do I need to? Or do you think I should? Excuse me, should? Some people, you know, find that it kind of tips the scale into, my productivity, my performance is kind of slipping. Maybe I should be open about this so I can get the supports that I need. Other people say, you know what, I'm doing fine. I kind of don't want to open that Pandora's box because, let's be honest, we're living in a more inclusive society than ever before, but stigma and bias, explicit and implicit bias, still exist. It is tricky, and that's why I do think it's important to have these open discussions. You know, it's harder when your child is 6 years old, but obviously when your child gets older, you can kind of go through these pros and cons with them and help them make the best decision for them.
Yeah, exactly. It's so important. Think long term.
Yeah.
I always tell parents, like, don't jump so far ahead, right? Like, live in the now, think in the now, right? But in this case, I would say, sometimes we do have to think long term. Yeah. So speaking of that, that actually brings us into the next one that I get asked constantly. With some diagnoses more than the other, but a lot of parents will say to me, well, you know, I'm worried that if I tell my child they have this disability, they're going to then use that, right, as a crutch or as an excuse. And, you know, it's some way kind of allowing them to engage in certain behaviors because of the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And we see this, at least I've seen this more often in kids with ADHD, where parents are like, well, I don't know that I want to I don't know if I want to tell them, right? And an answer that I usually give is, when you're presenting this to your child, there is a way that you can present it so that they're not going to use it as an excuse. And so essentially, we want to teach kids that ADHD can be an explanation for the behavior, but not an excuse, right? So an example might be teaching your child that the behavior happened, let's say they break their pencil during math, right? So we're saying this behavior happened as a result of ADHD. And I know it was wrong. I know I made a mistake and I'm still learning, right? I can problem solve. I can fix this. So that's one mindset. Another mindset might be, oh, I broke this pencil during math because I have ADHD. I can't control my impulses. I can't help it. Oh, well, I'm just going to keep breaking pencils, right? So now it's becoming, well, it's an excuse and it's not looking at things from this problem-solving mindset. So I think if we can teach our kids, if we start with that explanation mindset, then they will be more likely to approach their symptoms that way. So they might say, I do have ADHD. I sometimes have trouble focusing on my work. I need this tool to help me. That's okay, right? Instead of, well, I guess I just can't do my work today because I can't focus, right? So I think it's just thinking about the way that we are presenting it, and then hopefully that in turn will result in them looking at things a little differently too.
It sounds like what you're saying is your disability can influence your baby behavior or make it a little bit harder for you to, in this case, control your impulses. You're working on it. Therefore, you need to maybe use different strategies to kind of help you with that response inhibition to kind of work with your ADHD. It's not an excuse.
So hopefully that will help parents understand that, you know, I think by telling kids that they have ADHD can be really beneficial, because on the other side of things, when we don't tell kids about it, then, like you had mentioned, then they're like, well, what's wrong with me? Why am I stupid? Why am I not raising my hand as fast as everybody else? I know that answer. Why can't I do it too? Right? So now it's like, no, there's an explanation for some of those behaviors, and that's okay. And let's work together to come up with ways to make it a little easier for you with some of these, you know, challenging things that you're having.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Coming from a strength-based approach, and we didn't really touch on this, but certainly there's a lot of literature pointing to the links between mental health challenges and disabilities like ADHD. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Autism.
You talked about it before. We've mentioned this on the podcast. Kids with ADHD see a higher proportion of corrective or punitive statements to a ratio of punitive mm-hmm. statements to positive statements compared to a neurotypical kid. And that can really impact self-esteem. So, so mm-hmm. keep that in yeah. mind if you're withholding this information for a long time and they're thinking like, why am I stupid? Why can't I do this? I'm just not cut out for school or mm-hmm. I can't get it.
Right.
You know, there are mental health implications here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So, yeah. Well, similar to what you were talking about, the concerns using the disability as a crutch or as an excuse, what goes into that, and I think what can support parents is knowing the difference between the disability and age-appropriate behavior. I was just mm-hmm. doing a podcast yesterday, actually, with one of my mentors, and she has a podcast called Think Differently with Dr. Teresa Haskins. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, all three-year-olds are going to tantrum sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't hold it against them. Can we really blame autism necessarily, right? But I think it's important for parents to empower themselves with knowledge around what is age-appropriate behavior, right? So it is to be expected that when your child doesn't have that language that they need to communicate, that they're going to get frustrated, right? So you've got a two-year-old or even a three-year-old. But as time goes on, we can start to observe our kids and see other friends as well. This was hard during the pandemic, I will say, because we mm-hmm. had fewer opportunities for that point of reference because we weren't around other kids. But observe other kids. See what's going on. Read. There are, you know, American Academy of Pediatrics, understood.org, some of our favorite sites. They have lots of good information in terms of developmental sequences. So, you know, keep that in mind. So if your child is, let's say, not talking at 3 and at 4 years old, that might be an indicator that you want to investigate something further. So, you know, I do think it is important to kind of understand that, hey, maybe my child's behavior is more attributed to their disability versus their age when you're, you know, comparing to other kids and you know the typical developmental sequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I will say this is a hard one sometimes. Like sometimes it is a little bit of a puzzle to know, wait a second, like is this rigidity because let's say your child does have an autism diagnosis, right? Is this rigidity because of autism or is this rigidity because they're four, right? And they just want things to be their way because a lot of four-year-olds are like that. Mine, now she's five, but she's still like that. It's definitely a four-year-old thing, I can tell you. But I feel like that can sometimes be very tricky for parents. And I think the reason that it's so tricky is because, and this is what I hear from parents often, is that they will say, well, you know, I don't want to correct that behavior or I don't want to punish that behavior if they're not in control, right? If it's because of their disability, then now how do we parent it? And so mm-hmm. I think it does make it really tricky, but I think you've nailed it in that the more information you have, the better decision you're going to make. So the more I know about autism, the more I'm going to be able to decipher between autism and age-appropriate behavior like tantrums, for example.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think you do make a good point. Like there is no easy answer to this one. Sometimes it's hard to disentangle the two. You know, and another thing to think about is observe your child. If they do have the skills in a certain environment, let's say the teacher says, oh, yeah, they're doing really well. They're doing great with their impulse control. But then you see it kind of spin out of control at home. Mm-hmm. That's also something to consider. It's like, do they have the skills at all? And if they do, but they're just not practicing them at home, it's probably more, you know, related to other things as opposed to they mm-hmm. literally don't have the skill. So,
that's a great point.
Yeah. So, you know, keep that in mind. Is it a skill deficit? I mean, disability or not, if you can identify that there's a challenge, there's definitely opportunities to support your child's learning and skill development over time. So, you know, there's always a good kind of solution there. We don't want to just say, well, sometimes we don't know what we got to we got to just deal with that. There, you know, you can look at it from like a skills perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So another one, kind of moving along the path here, I think another thing that you can do as parents for your child, right? So obviously we want to get to know the disability. We want to start talking to our kids about it. But another really helpful strategy is to find healthy role models for your kids who have similar experiences. And so there's obviously there's many different disabilities, right? And some are more common than others or more prevalent than others, right? Sure. But if you can find somebody that has experienced that, kind of pull them in and allow them to be that role model. I see this coming up more often with our teenagers, right? Yeah. And so it's like, well, look at this person. They, you know, they have this, you know, a very similar experience to you. You guys can relate to one another in so many ways. And they've really overcome some of these challenges. Let's look at how they did that, right? Mm-hmm. Like how inspiring. And so I think it's, you know, obviously it's going to be dependent on the disability and all that. But I think that can be really, really helpful just to help your child understand it a little bit better and feel like they're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. 100%. We've seen people, adults, come out, you know, in the workplace as well. And when you've got leaders and, you know, it helps to kind of destigmatize and normalize as well when you've got successful people who are coming out and saying, hey, I've been successful. By the way, I also have a disability.
Right. Yeah. Encouraging. Absolutely.
All right. So kind of getting down to the last couple here. It's important for parents to find a network of other parents who have similar experiences, to find your tribe, as we say, share information, share resources. You can also read articles, or these days there's so many videos out there of adults who have a disability and talk about what they wish their parent knew. What they wanted their parent to say or to do when they're kids. There's a good article. I really like the article called The Mighty.
Mighty.com. Yeah, I've seen that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they see things like, you know, don't decide. There's an article about written different snippets of people with disabilities. And they were asked, what do you wish your parents knew back then? Mm. You know, so things like, you know, don't decide your, or I wish that you didn't decide my limits for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I know. Goodness. Or, you know, I was strong enough to keep up with the other kids. I'm not lazy. I, you know, those sorts of things.
Oh, my gosh. This is going to make me cry. Hold on. This is taking a turn.
I know. Oh, yeah. So there's a lot of stuff on here.
Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah. So it's, you know, I think this goes back to, this is not – you're a part of this journey, but this is also your child's experience. And it's important for you to do your collect information and do your homework so that you can empower your child. And you can do that by listening to adults that have gone through this journey before your child.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think related to this, we talked about this during – I think it was maybe the – maybe our parent guilt one. I think a very related is finding like-minded parents or parents who have similar experience, because it can be really hard if you are surrounded by parents who don't experience what you're experiencing, right? And so then you're kind of in that bucket of, man, wow, they can all, or you're kind of in the mindset like, wow, all these kids are doing it. Mine's not. I'm excluded. How come, you know, you kind of get into these like negative thoughts, right? Because all the other kids are doing this and you can't do this. And it can become challenging, right? Like, let's say your child just doesn't do well at birthday parties and all the parents are talking about the birthday party, right? And you weren't there. And I feel like over time, that can be really hard on a parent. So I often tell parents, find those that are experiencing this too, for you, so that you can not only to get information, but to feel like, you know, I'm not alone. Again, kind of like find things for the kids and find things for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That could also change your mindset on your child's disability too, right? Like you can have a more positive approach that could also lead to you being generally more positive around your child as well. And that can change the whole dynamic. So it's not this, oh my gosh, it's this big barrier we have to overcome. It's, hey, this is, you know, we're cruising through life. This is our current situation. And we've got a lot of other friends that are cruising through life in a similar way. Mm-hmm. We're going to share ideas. We're going to have a good time. So yeah, your support system can be really impactful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So just a couple more we gathered here. So related to finding healthy role models for your kids, those are going to be healthy role models, but you might not necessarily come into contact with them, right? They might be on the internet, right? Out there in the cloud somewhere. But in this case, we're talking about helping your child find their culture, right? So let's actually introduce them to like-minded people so they don't feel alone. And really allowing them to kind of come together with somebody where it might not naturally be there. And this could be for certain cultures that maybe there's no kids in their class who are blind, for example, right? Or hearing impaired, right? And they're the only one and they have no one in their class or their peer group or even their social groups to relate to. So our job as parents could be to help find those people for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a newer concept that's coming up within the disability space, kind of this concept of disability culture or naming it as such. I told you, Kristen, I read a book not that long ago called True Biz by Sarah Novich, and it's about deaf culture. And it was really fascinating to me. It definitely opened my eyes to a culture that I was not aware of at all. True biz in deaf culture is kind of a term that means like real talk or seriously. And it was just so fascinating. It's this world that I am not a part of that I was really excited to kind of learn more about. So I know that the autism community has a really strong kind of culture as well in terms of the language, and they've got a good, strong self-advocacy network and so on. So yeah, I think it goes parallel to everything that we're saying, like, you know, elevate this, empower your child, get them connected to their culture so they can be around people and, you know, see this in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't know if do you watch Big Brother?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
you do? I do like Big Brother.
Never had this conversation. Okay, now we need to talk about it every summer. Okay, so this most recent Big Brother, they had one of the guys on there was deaf, and he spoke about it a lot. And he was talking. There was a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that came out, like a lot of the ways that they helped him feel included. And there was even some, if you watched it, right, there were even some times where things got misinterpreted behind his back a bit, but people were like most people were quite sensitive to it, and they made sure to, you know, really make sure that he was included. And I thought that was really inspiring for people. And there's a lot of shows like that where, like Survivor, for example, or like all of these kind of reality shows where they have somebody who, you know, has a disability and they're embracing it. And I just love to see it.
Yeah, it was. Okay, so we need to talk about our CBS viewership offline here.
Yeah, apparently.
I guess Survivor is starting again soon. My husband just said that.
Yes.
Yesterday. The thing I thought was really cool is that the producers of Big Brother, they would use cue cards to write out what the directions were of the challenges. So if you're familiar with Big Brother, a lot of times they'll have someone say on the loudspeaker what they need to do. And so this particular person wasn't able to hear that. They weren't able to see the person's lips moving because it was just on a speaker. So they had it written out. So you can hear everybody else kind of looking up, listening. And this particular contestant, you know, they had it written out for him. So they had a very simple accommodation, a visual for him. So yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was cool. Did he either won or he went to like the very end? He was in the top three.
Yeah, he was definitely in the top three. And now I'm thinking, like, did he win? And I like really embraced the show. So I'm like, how am I going to remember? Too many things in life. But I feel like, did he win America's Favorite? No, Cameron won America's Favorite. I remember that. Anyway, for those of you that don't watch it, go watch it. It's pretty good. I also think that I read somewhere, and he might have done an interview or something, I think he could hear a little bit, which was a little bit more helpful for some of those more auditory heavy challenges. But they did everything they could to make sure that he had an equal opportunity, which was really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we're getting down to the last one here. This is also a term that maybe some folks haven't heard, but as your kids grow, it's really, really important to educate yourself on this, but it's the concept of self-determination. So what that means is, or it refers to both the right and the capacity for individuals to exert control over their lives and kind of direct their lives. So this is a little bit different than the words kind of independence or being self-sufficient. It's really about kind of quote unquote controlling your own destiny. There's a really wonderful organization, PACER. So it's, if you go to pacer.org, they have a lot of good information on there, especially around the areas of transitions to adulthood. So a lot of different topics there. So independent living, employment, and so on. So that's a good one. But as our kids are younger, it's important to think about allowing your child to make decisions. Give them opportunities to have choices. Practice self-advocacy. And I know we might have an inclination to jump in there and protect our kids and save our kids, but at the end of the day, you got to think long-term. If you're constantly protecting and cocooning your child so much, they're not going to have that practice, those skills to be able to kind of practice the self-determination. Mm-hmm. So giving them early opportunities to make choices, decision, you know, do some decision-making, problem-solving and with you kind of coaching and then fading back is going to be important because you kind of have to learn from consequences. It's just overall part of this process.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think it's important to teach kids that, you know, failure is part of the process, right? We're going to make mistakes. There's going to be consequences. We might not do things the way that we intended to. Or I think more importantly, sometimes you're not going to understand. I had, this is kind of interesting. So my kids have baseball practice on Monday nights and I happened to be walking by my son's practice and one of the coaches was throwing the ball with one of the kids. And the kid kept doing it wrong. I don't know what it was because I didn't hear the whole thing. And he just kept doing it wrong. And the coach said, "Hey, buddy, listen, if you don't understand what I asked you to do, I need you to say, 'I don't understand. Tell me again,'" right? And he goes, "Because you just, you still did it wrong because I know you didn't hear me." So like either he just wasn't throwing the ball to whoever he was supposed to or he was doing something wrong, right? And I kind of walked by as I heard that and I was thinking, what a great coach, right? Like he didn't say like, "Why do you keep messing up, man?" You know, like he just kept saying like, he clearly noticed this child needed to advocate for himself. And so he just put it into practice, right? He said, "Hey, if you don't understand what I ask you to do, just ask me," right? And I thought that was really awesome. But I think as parents, we could do the same thing, right? You know, to teach our kids, "Hey, if you didn't understand something that I said or your teacher said, it's okay to ask for help." I think that's so important.
Yeah. And pair it with, "You're not going to get in trouble. I'm not going to be mad at you. If you advocate for yourself, I'm going to say, 'Hey, thanks for clarifying.'" That is a great tool to take it into the workplace as well. I was just talking to someone yesterday about this exact same thing. He has a direct report and they just say, "Yeah, okay, got it." And then output is usually not accurate. So we talked about ways to create that kind of psychological safety. Like, make sure your environment is such that it's okay. People aren't going to be criticized or punished for saying, "I don't understand." And, you know, you could even say like, "Can you repeat back to me what the plan is?" You know, if the, and this might be easier when your kid is younger versus in the workplace, but that is also a strategy too. Like, "Okay, can you tell me what the plan is? What are we going to do?" And create that kind of openness. But yeah, I do think that's a good connection point back to self-determination, really giving people the, you know, that control over their lives, making sure they understand, making sure they have everything that they need to pursue what they want.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. All right. Well, we did it. So good. All right. Well, thanks for joining us on our 45th episode of Behaviorally Speaking. As Angie mentioned earlier, on our next episode, we will be discussing puberty.
Woohoo!
So until then, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform so you never miss an episode.
You've been listening to Behaviorally Speaking with Angela Nelson and Kristen Bondi, brought to you by Rethink Care. find out more at rethinkcare.com. You can find past podcast episodes under the Resources tab. We also invite you to subscribe, follow, like, and leave us some feedback wherever you listen to podcasts. Your feedback helps us prepare topics and content for future episodes. Until next time, have a great day.